Oh, no, I lost my pen.
I was at Wawa's. I wanted to order a sandwich. You press a little touch tone keypad, all right? You just touch that, and you know, the sandwich comes out. You touch this, go pay the cashier. There's your sandwich. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And then they took him to the teller, you know, the ATM. And you put your Diner's Club card in there. And you press this, press it. Out comes money. Mitt Romney. Well, what do you know?
Not much, you!
Live from Cupertino, California to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Michelle Good. In this hour of What Do You Know, Michael chats with the man who wrote the book on Barack Obama, David Marinus. All the news that isn't in the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI-affiliated stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who asks, have you ever been to Wawa's? Push this, push that, there's your sandwich, Michael Feldman!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like instant hoagies. Has anyone ever actually been to Wawa's, by the way? It's in Pennsylvania, I guess. I don't know if they're just in Pennsylvania, but it's like a hoagie sandwich shop, apparently. And that Mitt was astounded at. It's so cute because he's on this bus ride, and it was his first bus ride, too. So he's having such a great time wherever he is. Well, Jim Packard, as probably most of you know listening, passed away last Sunday night. And frankly, I didn't realize how partnered we were. But it's been very devastating to all of us, and I miss Jim terribly. And as I was saying earlier, I feel like he's here right now because he would never miss a show. Because frankly, he doesn't want anyone sitting in his chair. and that goes on forever. You know, it doesn't just end. I would, however, just if you wouldn't mind, you know, the radio, the worst thing in the world is dead air. But if we could just take maybe 60 seconds and just think about Jim. Thank you. Thank you all very much, and thank you, Jim, for everything. And now, not to change the pace, but for all the news that isn't, Mitt Luther meeting with the Legion of Doom in a secret hideaway in Utah will be a ritual selection of vice president. They sacrifice a virgin, and they're out of there. Of course, before leaving, they have to, the Legion of Doom, they always slay all the servants in case someone saw the ritual. So it pays pretty good. It's $12 an hour, but you know. The congressional contempt charge, which lands on the desk of Attorney General Holder, who drags self out by the collar with gun to head and says, get back, or the brother gets it. These jokes are getting a little long, but try and pare them down. God particle found, and boy, is it mad. Commerce Secretary seizes the moment and retires. Oh, okay, fine. That's right. I'm sure that was not anything to do with me. Tumbling shares make a housewares retailer bed, bath, and that's about it. Germany's Angela Merkel looking a lot tenser without George W. to rub her neck, that's for sure. A couple has been freed by the Somali pirates after they just couldn't stand them anymore. I mean, yachting couples. What kind of a couple says, let's yacht on the coast of Somalia. Sure, honey. Great. The Romneys would do that, I bet. The Microsoft tablet has been unearthed. It's clay, and it uses the cuneiform operating system. It's quite a find. In an attempt to widen the flock, the Southern Baptists have renamed themselves the NASCAR Baptists. Fewer people paying attention to ADHD. By the way, I use my ADHD discount all the time, so you just show them the card. It's great. Michigan authorities go door-to-door looking for vaginas. They're serious about it, too. You know. In Michigan, the female parts can only be referred to as pawpaws. Little-known fact about Michigan. Anyone here from Michigan? Pawpaws, right? Right. Okay, so the war on women has now gone on to the war on you-know-what down there. In other news, if there is any, standard model of the universe flawed, replaced with the Kohler model. That's a better joke than I got a response. But maybe you got to be from around here. I don't know. Maybe not. I wouldn't know. Moderate drinking during pregnancy, not only okay, but just about required. That's a new finding. Isn't it wonderful? Everything that's bad for you is good for you now. What a relief. After all those years of trying to stop things, now you can drink all the coffee you want, all the wine you want, all the beer you want. Pregnant women can just go on a bender if they want to, if they're feeling a little down. What an age in which we live. What are you doing way over there?
I don't know. I feel like
I'm... Yeah, no, that's too... Just push your. Can you push that over? Are you plugged in or something?
Yeah, I'm always plugged in.
You're too far from me, man. I know we got Clyde's drums in here. Clyde's going to be here. That's cool. Okay, where was I? Benders. Okay. President Obama misses 4,006 free throws in a row on the White House court. I think that's a record. He was going for the record, I guess. Janet Jackson's breast gets the okay 10 years too late. All right. Romney says he will replace health care with wealth care. And food stamps with Wawa's hoagie gift cards. Because he really was impressed with Wawa's. I think it's going to be known as Mitts. If he loses, it's going to be known as Mitts from now on, because he's going to take over that chain. They'll operate him out of Calcutta, of course. But where was I? Oh, yeah, the Obama edict that stopped immigrant children from being deported. Big relief to Mitt Romney, who is the son of a Mexican father. Once again, too long, and takes too long to think about it. You have to know certain things, and if you don't, then it doesn't mean anything. New 90-inch flat-screen TVs are out now. They show the Real Housewives surgery scars. So, you know, maybe not get one, you know. The typical American family of four now includes at least one Asian. And one Latino and one kid with glasses and curly hair who's really smart, but also a smartass. The website Politico fires a blogger on their site for not realizing Mitt Romney is not comfortable around white folks either. He's just not comfortable. Roger Clemens covers his butt. And here in Wisconsin, voters must decide if Ron Johnson and Tommy Thompson from Wisconsin is just too cute. That's all the news it is, and thank you so much. Oh, yeah. That's right. I think Ron Johnson from Wisconsin is even too much, to tell you the truth. But I like, you know, I like Tommy and everything. Nice guy. He should stay back whatever he was doing, you know. He's retired. Who unretires and runs for Senate? What is that? David Marinus is with us. He's in Washington, D.C., but he actually lives here. He says he lives here in Madison, you know. But I've never seen him around the streets or at the Jennifer Market or anything. We'll have to find out more about this. His last book was the Lombardi one, you know. I read that, and that was a great book. And this one is, he bit off something pretty big here to chew on. Barack Obama, the story. The story so far, actually, just goes up to age 27. So we're left guessing as to what happens to him after that. David's on the line with us from this. My board here is not even working, by the way. Nothing's lighting up. So can you put David on? Is that, yes. David, are you there?
I am here, Michael, and just go to Victor Allen's on Monroe Street any morning when I'm out there, and you'll find me.
Yes. David, you know Jim Packard died? I don't know if you know that, if you heard that part. And I know he would love to be saying hello to you right now.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he's an old friend of yours as well. So.
Oh.
Yeah, so I know he wishes he were here to talk, to say hello anyway.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Now, Barack Obama, I saw that the Hitler biography just came out. Are you kind of wishing at this point you would have gone with Hitler instead of Obama? A little easier subject, maybe?
I try to write only about people that I'm actually interested in.
Yeah. Well, so you're not interested in Hitler?
I've had enough of that.
Had enough of that?
Yeah.
Been there, done that or something. I do want to say, if you ever write my biography,
yes.
The odds are against it, let's face it. At this point, I could do something exceptional in the next few years, but it's got to be quick, you know. But if you do my bio, don't bother with the genealogy because it's a dead end. We go back as far as somewhere around Kiev, and there's no records beyond that.
How about the girlfriends and the...
Don't ask about the old girlfriends or the pot use in college, okay?
Okay.
Then we got a deal. I'll sign off on it in advance. This book is maybe the most unusual biography I've read, in that it is sort of like Tristan Shandy. Someone said that, you know, where he goes back to his own birth and all that,
right?
And describes it and stuff. Well, the form of it. How did you come up with it?
Well, you know, it's just the genre is called biography, but I didn't think of it in those terms. Oh. I came up with a book that I wanted to write, which is the world that created Barack Obama and then how he remade himself. Because he is such a product of the modern world from all of its different aspects, and that's what obsessed me from the beginning, and that's why I approached the book that way.
And do you feel that you know him any better after doing all his research and all his background than you did when you started?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I understand him now, and I hope that even though the book ends when he's 27, that people who read it will understand why he does what he does as president.
I'm not trying to be critical of the book or anything, but I didn't so much get that from the book. What I got from the book was that at one point you say, well, this is this guy who invented himself, you know, and obviously that's just a short answer, you know. But in a sense, it's also true, because so much of it was self, because he had to be self-inventive due to his circumstances. He had a mother that didn't particularly direct him. He had a father who was totally absent.
Well, his father was never there. I disagree with you about his mother. I mean, she wasn't always there herself. When he was an adolescent and teenager, she was in Indonesia and he was in Honolulu. But her conscience is deeply imprinted on everything that he does. So I think she did influence him.
Oh, no, I think that's true. But in terms of, you know, his actions, they were separated for quite a few years and stuff, and he sort of raised himself to a large extent, with the grandparents, I think.
Yes, he lived with his grandparents. He compared them, for any of your people there who watch Mad Men, he compared his grandmother, Madeline Dunham, to Peggy on Mad Men. She started as a secretary in a bank and finished as a vice president. And then he said, and she and his grandfather did all that smoking and drinking and stuff, which is sort of a Mad Men thing. But his grandmother was very pragmatic and had that aspect of him imprinted on him as well.
Yeah. Mercer Island, that's where she grew up, basically, at the moment, right?
Well, she went to high school in Mercer Island near Seattle, right?
Right. Which, you know, and I don't quite get some of the things here, but it looks like a miniature Africa. Is that supposed to be foreshadowing? You said it's shaped like a miniature Africa, Mercer
Island. Just looked at the, I don't know where you're going here, Michael, but yes. I mean, if you look at Mercer Island, it looks like Africa.
But is that intended to be a little foreshadowing that she will someday meet an African student?
I just wrote it for fun. You can take it however you want.
But there's quite a bit of that in this book there, you know, because you flip forward from, I don't know, the Crimean War to, you know, to Chicago ward politics, which are very close, actually, if you think about it.
They are the same thing.
Yeah, they are the same thing. So there's quite a bit of that in the book where you're kind of like foreshadowing.
Well, there's a little bit of that,
Quite a bit, actually.
Okay, quite a bit.
Quite a bit of it, yes. And then Barack Obama Sr., or the first, I guess it would be, He's like the foreign student from hell.
Well, he was a difficult man, and one of the conclusions I reach after studying him so thoroughly is that the president was lucky that he never lived with him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
He was an alcoholic and abusive physically.
Right. And his mother, too, because he was a wife beater, among other things.
Yes, absolutely.
And a multiple marrier. When he married...
Well, that's part of the Luo culture. Yeah. You know, he's from Kenya, the Luo tribe, and they historically have been polygamists.
Yeah, okay. And he came here on the Jackie Robinson Chock Full of Nuts scholarship?
The first wave of Kenyans, Africans to come to the United States to be trained really in preparation for independence, yeah.
Yeah. And he was supposed to be quite a remarkably intelligent man and very outgoing, gregarious, and so forth, but totally wasted all those talents, basically, in his life. He became an alcoholic. He was
in and out of the government in Kenya until he died at an early age in a traffic accident, which seemed sort of inevitable because he was constantly drinking and driving. But, yes, he was a brilliant man who never lived up to his potential because of his own personal demons.
Okay. And his mother, Stanley, actually, her name was Stanley, right? Stanley Ann?
Stanley Ann. Yeah. And people assume that she was named after her father, whose name was Stanley. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, she was named after a character played by Betty Davis in a movie who was named Stanley, a woman, who was not a particularly likable character in the movie, but Madeline Dunham, Stanley's mother, loved Betty Davis and emulated her.
How did they end up in Hawaii, I guess, is a good question.
Well, they were, Stan Dunham, the father, was, I liken him to a Willie Loman character. He was constantly on the move and had big dreams that he could never fulfill. And part of that carried him further west from Kansas to suburban Seattle to Hawaii. He was a furniture salesman when he got there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so he brought the family down to Hawaii.
And she was 17 years old, the daughter, and met Barack Obama Sr. in a Russian class in her freshman year when she was 17.
17. And within a year, she was pregnant and married.
Yep. Well, within a year, she was pregnant, and they did get married. And Barack Obama was indeed born in Honolulu, but they never really had much of a marriage. They never lived together.
Yeah, because he left. And then he actually took up with another woman and married her as well.
Another American, and she went to Kenya with him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All the background on this, if that sounds interesting to you, which it is, it's all in here, basically. But you also go back into tribal culture in Kenya because is it good to know this so you understand the father a little more? Is that what the thinking is on the Kenyan part of the story?
You decide that for yourself, Mike. You sound hostile about this.
I'm really not.
I'm fascinated by it.
I am too. I am sort of hostile about the father, actually, when I read it.
Well, that's a fine conclusion to reach.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I'd never really known about him. Because it's funny, because, you know, the memoir was Dreams from My Father.
Yes, but really, you know, he didn't know his father at all. It's a vacuum in his life.
Right.
And his memoir, which I think is really well written, is essentially shaped through the lens of race, and so everything in it goes through that notion. And so he makes his father a bigger character than he really was in his life.
Right. So he invented his father and himself, basically.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, that's true. There's a lot of mythology about the family that I deal with in the book.
Yeah. And even in the memoir itself, it's kind of a unauthorized autobiography.
Well, he acknowledges in his introduction that there are composite characters and compressed action. And,
right.
You know, without making a huge deal out of it, which the right wing is now trying to do,
right.
I'm just trying to be a serious historian and get the story right.
Yeah.
When I first, when I interviewed him in the White House, I let him read the introduction first, and when we started to talk, he said, David, you called my book fiction. And I said, no, Mr. President, I complimented you. I called it literature, which it is. And there's a big difference between writing biography and writing a memoir, and I understand and accept that.
Yeah.
But the you know, the beginning of our conversation was not about that at all. It was about the Packers and the Bears.
Yeah.
For all of you Packer fans out there, when I got into the White House, remembering that game 2 years ago between the Bears and the Packers to decide the NFC Championship,
right.
Obama said he'd go to the Super Bowl if the Bears won.
Right.
And then Woodson got on a table afterwards and said, the president isn't coming to see us. We'll go see him in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked into the Oval Office and said, Mr. President, Charles Woodson got here before me, but I'm glad we both finally made it. And he said, well, man, those Packers were rough on me. And I said, well, deservedly so. You're a Bears fan. And he said, well, every time I come to Green Bay, they give me another share of Packers stock. And I said, well, I guess they'll do that for anybody.
Yeah. Tell him it's non-voting. So you know. He's got another voting problem there.
That's right.
Okay, compare and contrast Lombardi and Obama.
Go ahead. Both winners, both obsessed with, both with very strong will. You know, Lombardi was great at making a family out of strangers. And Obama, basically, his life was a search for a family, which he found with Michelle and finally in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And you know, what comes out of all this, I guess, is, I don't know, lots of things do, but one thing is what an extraordinary individual he is. Despite all that he went
through. Yeah, well,
through
I mean, a lot. You know, the last third of the book is about him trying to figure himself out.
Right.
And he really does. And I can compare and contrast that with Bill Clinton, the other subject of one of my biographies, who basically just plowed through life, reinventing himself every day and forgiving himself, and not really trying to deal with the dysfunction and contradictions in his own self. And that got him to the White House. He's a preternatural survivor who needs people and always can figure a way out of things. But it also got him in trouble in the White House and got him out of trouble again because he's such a good survivor. Obama's the opposite. He came out of dysfunction too, but spent 10 years really trying to resolve those contradictions. And he was pretty good at it. And it got him to the White House. And then, you know, in the dysfunctional politics of today, it sort of didn't really help him that much when he became president.
Yeah. But with Clinton, though, I mean, kids in grade school probably knew he was going to go into politics.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
and it was Arkansas anyway, you know, and everyone is a politician in Arkansas, it seems.
Yeah, well, he ran for office so much in high school that the principal finally came to him and said he couldn't run anymore. And he had to run for class secretary, which he did, and then a girl in the class beat him, and he wouldn't talk to her again.
Yeah. But in looking at Barack Obama, I mean, you look for clues as to when he started to think politically, and you don't...
They don't come up in high school.
No.
They don't come up in college. You see in college at Occidental and Columbia the first inklings of his sense of destiny. But it wasn't really until he got to Chicago and worked as a community organizer that he saw different forms of power and what it would take for him to really try to change things, and that was electoral politics.
Right. In high school, it was all pot and basketball, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, in his memoir, he says that he didn't start on his high school team because he played black and the coach was a conservative white guy, which I guess Wisconsin people can identify with. But in fact, he was the one guy on the team who couldn't dunk.
Yeah. That's right. And he can only move to his left, as I understand.
He can only drive to his left. Only and it was an excellent basketball team.
So there was an inkling. That's the only inkling we have, is that he could just drive to his left.
Well, he is left-handed, Michael.
Okay. There's that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to make, you can do the foreshadowing, but I can't. Is that what you're saying? this is quite amazing. So the politics thing really started in Chicago. Harold Washington was elected mayor, and that brought him to town.
Yeah, he was, you know, within 6 months of one another, three people came to Chicago in 1985, and it was first Oprah Winfrey, then Michael Jordan, and then Barack Obama. And, of course, everybody knew the first two within a year, and Obama was utterly anonymous. The only person in the city who knew him was his great uncle.
But he had a kind of a procedural problem because Chicago was hot-blooded, two-fisted jump. I remember in Washington, I was down there actually during the Washington administration, when the aldermen were on top of their desks.
Yeah,
they were on top of their desks.
Oh, it was vicious. But, you know, Obama's
yelling
life has been really sort of an ability to avoid traps. And one of the traps he avoided was never running for the city council, which is a much bigger job than being in the state legislature. But he went down to Springfield and avoided much of that Chicago stuff.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
It was politically a brilliant stroke.
Yeah, because it didn't. Reverend Love was that? That was really kind of his minister more than this other guy, right?
More than Reverend Wright, who became notorious later. Yeah.
But I remember Reverend Love in the book says, "I wish he would get angry once in a while or start pounding."
Well, that was one of the things that you could see as a community organizer that Barack Obama's temperament was not really that of an angry, confrontational sort, which organizers sometimes need to be. He was always trying to bring people together and not getting angry. And you can see that in his presidency and many of his supporters wishing that he would be a little more outspoken about the things he believes in and go at the Republicans more.
Have you ever seen Key and Peele on the Comedy Channel?
I'm sorry, tell me.
The two comedians? They do an angry Obama thing. Oh. They do one where one guy is actually playing Obama,
uh-huh.
and his other friend is standing up, and he's translating it into
uh-huh.
anger.
Uh-huh.
And he gets incredibly the regular Obama will make a statement, and then the standing angry Obama
will translate what he really meant.
Will do it angry, angry, fist pumping, screaming, angry.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, but it's sort of based on this premise. People sort of expect that once in a while he's going to.
Yeah, well, you know, there is an unfortunate racial aspect to that, which is an angry black man doesn't necessarily play well in parts of our country. But Obama was, you know, even when he was on the south side of Chicago, which is predominantly black, he had the same personality, so it wasn't just a racial thing.
Yeah. It is being such a, I mean, here's a man who thinks and his judgments are temperate. He's very intelligent, obviously, but he thinks about what he does it for. Is that hampered his effectiveness in the
presidency?
Well,
I mean, there are times when it appears it does.
Yes.
You know, he's very deliberative, and that can sometimes anger his supporters. But when you look at certain things, like the first 2 years of his presidency, the gay community was pounding on him. Why aren't you acting? You promised you'd get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it took him 2 years, but he did it. And he did it in a way that got the military to go along. So often when he appears to be behind the times or whatever, he's just trying to figure out the most effective way of getting something done.
Yeah. And does he?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes it's impossible.
Yeah, right.
Or he doesn't.
Right.
He's not perfect, but that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah. Interesting. I was struck by one short phrase, two-word phrase in the book, utterly alone.
Uh-huh.
With his self-characterization.
Yeah, well, you know, he grew up pretty much alone. That's very true. I mean, without a father and with his mother off and gone. And you know, even as wonderful as his grandfather was doting, if a little bit strange, and his grandmother was very pragmatic, but was a closet alcoholic, which he acknowledged to me. So you can imagine growing up biracial in a white family with your mother gone and your father not there and all of that, he was pretty much alone.
Yeah, and the book only goes up to age 27, which is when he started Harvard? Or?
The book ends with him driving up to Harvard, and I, by that time, what obsessed me I'd resolved, which was how he figured himself out personally in finding Chicago and home at last, and also how he figured out what he wanted to do with his sense of destiny, which was politics. He had all that figured out. He drives up to Harvard to get the bona fides to start that life.
Yeah. But when you think about it, how improbable is that, though? I mean, you know, here's...
Well, everything in his life is improbable.
I know.
Utterly.
But becoming president, you know, if I, you know, was within 3 years, I told you I was going to be president of the United States, that would sound improbable to you, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. What's your audience say?
I don't know. But all right, it really is incredibly improbable because here he's 1996, elected to the state senate in Illinois, the state senate.
Oh, completely. And year 2000, I mean, I've done a lot of reporting for the second volume of this book, but when you think about it, only in the year 2000, he went out to the Democratic convention in Los Angeles and nobody knew him, and his credit card bounced and he had to go back home. And then 8 years, you know, 6 years later, 7 years later, he's announcing for president, and 8 years later, he's president of the United States. It's extraordinary.
How is that even possible? I mean, you know, if I were just looking at this in the book, I'd say I would.
Well, it was
give you
a
blue pencil on this
timing
one.
And self-confidence and the nation being ready for it.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you were just seeing that in, let's say, in a novel or something,
yeah.
You knew nothing about, wouldn't you blue pencil that and say,
probably
know,
so.
Put something
probably
in here.
So. The other thing to remember is that our culture has changed so much in terms of what time feels like.
Yeah.
You know, that a year is like 10 years used to be, and a minute is an hour, and, you know, everything is just exponentially quicker now, including how people can change and become national figures.
Yeah. But, you know, I would say, David, I mean, even at this point, I think people, you know, like or dislike him, I guess, or hate him even, Obama, for what they sense he is like, for what
yes.
they see glimpses of him being. And that's very attractive and seems very, you know, really remarkable. But you just see that in glimpses, sort of. And he needs to bring that out more, I guess, so we can really understand where some of this is coming from.
Well, he is reserved. He, you know, in Hawaii there was a saying, cool head main thing, and he's a cool guy in that sense. And
he's still doing the Chum thing, the Chum gang thing, is that what you're saying?
Well, if he is, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mean the smoking, but I mean the sort of the attitude about
yeah.
that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's yeah. part of it.
Yeah.
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 You know, everybody has advice for what he should do, and he is what he is.
I'm not really trying to give him advice or anyone advice.
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
the last guy to do it. Don't. And if I give you any, don't take it. Promise
All right,
me
got
that.
It.
Promise me. But I would say, you know, the one thing about JFK, and he was only in 3 years, but when he did those press conferences, you got such a sense of the man and how he thought and how well he spoke and how well he thought, you know, and what he felt strongly about. And it was beautiful, you know. And that was so important for, you know, that's how you got to know.
That defined him. You're
yes,
right.
You know, to see JFK.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama does not do that with press conferences and needs to, if I were giving advice, I would say somehow get across more to people. Have a fireside chat or something. I don't know. Maybe that wouldn't work either.
Well, there's a lot of things that used to work that don't work anymore.
Yeah.
But obviously, his staff's trying to figure that out, what the best way is to connect.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just trying to explain him. I'm just trying to tell him what to do.
No, I know that. Except for the football thing.
Except for the football
yeah,
thing.
The football
yeah, but I'm never going to make him a Packer fan.
You got to do that. Well, the book is Barack Obama. This is the story, part one, right?
Yes, it is.
Part one. Part two coming up.
And I look forward, it'll take a while. I don't want to do a quickie, but it will come. And I'll be out in Madison in 10 days.
Okay, I'll look for you.
Can't wait to get there.
I'm going to look for you, man.
All right.
This time I'm going to see you on the street, David Marinus.
Thank
you. Thanks
so
much.
Thank you, Michael.
Nice talking to you, as always.
Okay.
Barack Obama, David Marinus, ladies and gentlemen. Not working. Okay, so the phone thing's not working. That's all I'm trying to tell. All right, then, Barack Obama. Anybody want the book? Because I can't keep carrying this around. This is a heavy book. This is like 500. Yes. Here. Excuse me, I just got to pass this book up. I'll be right back. Enjoy that. Oh, I'll give you the cover, too. I took that off. My notes are no charge on there. I wrote them in ink this time because I thought they should be immortalized. All my little stupid conclusions. Do you know how cute you are?
Yet.
You know, I thought so. But you know who also is cute? You.
Thanks.
But did you know it?
Yeah.
Show me a kid doesn't know he's cute. You know, I mean, they all know at that age. What's your name, honey?
Vanessa.
Vanessa, beautiful name. And your?
Tessa.
Vanessa and you guys rhyme. That is so cute. Vanessa and Tessa, ladies and gentlemen, gracing our audience. Vanessa and Tessa. That's almost like me. I named my kids from the same name. You know, my daughters are Ellie and Nora, but they'll both come from Eleanor. So like Vanessa and Tessa could be like one name, basically, that you stretched apart. Did you ever think of that?
No, I did not think about that.
Will you think about it now?
I have no choice.
The power of the media, once again, ladies and gentlemen. Tearing families apart. Shaker Heights attorney Harold Modarski. Where is Harold Modarski, Shaker Heights attorney? If you need an attorney in Shaker Heights, ladies and gentlemen, Harold Modorsky, I'll say no more. He's connected. Where is he? Stand up here, Harold Modorsky. Come on over here. What, you couldn't wear a pair of pants to the show?
No, this is all I have.
Do you have a pair of pants, long pants?
At the hotel, one pair.
Yeah. Why are you up here, Harold Modorsky?
We're visiting one of our sons who works in Madison, went to college here.
Yeah? So is that any reason to come in here? Or, I mean, you know, other places you could go.
We've listened to this show for years, and we thought it'd be fun.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. And how is Shaker Heights these days?
Very nice. This is the right time of year to be there.
Yeah.
It's spring.
That's why you're here, right?
Yeah. Well, but just here for the weekend.
And what is your question, Harold Modorsky?
I think I asked where the closest place to this theater is where I could go see safely a live badger.
You know, this is a great misnomer about Wisconsin. We actually
there are
no badgers. And no cows. I mean, people always think of cows. Yeah, and that's a stuff. That's not real. That's real. That's stuff. Ma'am, I'm sorry to break it to you. So it's called the Badger State because of the way our wives treat us. It goes way back. Constantly badgered. So then say, oh, here's a badger. You know, a guy from Wisconsin. It's kind of pejorative, really.
Okay, so I can't find a badger anywhere here.
Well, the zoo has one. The zoo, yeah.
Or else I talk to your wife.
It's imported from Michigan. You talk to my wife. Yeah, that's it. Please, somebody has to.
Thank nice you to so meet much. You. Thank you.
That's Harold Modorsky. If you need an attorney, Shaker Heights, Ohio. Okay. You know what? I'm running a little late here, so I'm going to go right to the four disclaimers, I think, and we're going to try to set up the quiz here. I'll meet you down at this aisle here, dear. Okay? I'm not going to race you. Don't make me run. Come on. Slow down. I'm not there yet. Okay. Well, come on down over here a little bit so we can... How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. And you are?
Margaret Anderson.
Are you from around here, Margaret?
I am. From Milwaukee originally, but I've been here for about 20 years.
Okay. What do you do these days?
I'm a paralegal.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you heal. And why don't you do the honors, and I'll give this to you.
Thank you. Yes. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. LeBron, I believe we're not in Cleveland anymore. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the phone lines, office phones, trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight. We love you, Jim.
Nice job. Beautifully done. All right, let's see the hands of those of you who want to try them at the What Do You Know quiz. You say you've come here all the way from wherever you came here from, Shaker Heights or wherever. This gentleman here is the only one, so it makes it a lot easier. But you come down. All right, well, we'll get maybe next time. But this, he had his hand up first. I saw him. Come on down here to this aisle if you would, sir. Are you just a volunteering type? Are you a type who volunteers?
Joe, I got to be on it. It's a dream.
Oh, really? Really? I'm in your dream, so that's pretty cool. And you are?
Sean DeWeese.
Sean, and are you from around here? Or?
No, Missouri.
No, Missouri. Where in Missouri?
St. Joseph. It's north of Kansas City.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. Sean, one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because it's a lifelong dream.
It's a lifelong dream. We've never even had that before. Come on down, Sean. Come on down here. Let's get you up here. We'll get you set up. As we ascend the What Do You Know stage, you can bound up there, Sean. You're in good shape. Have it sit there. That's your water if you want it. Some water, and I can get, you know, some mixed nuts or something. Or something, if you want a little treat or something. Get you going there. And, Sean, what are you doing these days?
In wastewater, industrial wastewater.
You're in wastewater?
Yep.
Isn't that uncomfortable? Isn't that the slightest bit uncomfortable?
It's glamorous.
Yeah. What part of wastewater are you in?
Industrial discharges, so the really nasty chemicals that go into the sewage, making sure they don't upset the treatment process.
And how do you do that?
A lot of sampling and testing.
Yeah.
And a lot of letter writing.
If you find something that's upsetting the balance, What do you do? How do you stop it, though?
You just go talk to them and work with them.
You talk to the wastewater?
You talk to the people discharging the wastewater.
Oh, I see. So you go around all these plants and things and manufacturers. And how do they take that when they're told their wastewater is too wasteful?
Fairly well.
They do?
Yeah, if you can narrow it down for them and really explain what the problem is, then...
No kidding.
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's great. And this is all around St. Joseph, or
yep.
That part of Missouri and so forth?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Are you here with family?
Just my brother-in-law.
Well, that's family.
Yes,
what do you mean, just
is.
My brother?
He's don't, close to family.
Don't say just your brother. Where is just your brother-in-law?
Raise your hand. I can't see.
There he is. Okay, there he's taking he your picture right now. Here. Get us together. You got it? Takes him a while to take a picture, doesn't it? But that's
yeah,
brother-in-law is for you.
It's an iPhone.
Yeah, okay. Are you like best friends with your brother-in-law?
No, we're getting there.
Yeah? Yeah. What has been holding it up, you think?
Out of distance, probably. We're about 2 hours apart.
So. Oh, okay. That's cool. Okay, Sean, you know how this works?
Yep.
Someone up there plays along with you. How do they get through and play on the quiz, Michelle?
Well, Michael, they pick up the phone and call 1-800-942-5669 and answer the qualifying question.
Okay, the world is overweight. Individuals in the world are overweight, particularly here, I guess, in Wisconsin is what I'm saying. The world needs to lose how many million tons of weight as a whole? Within how many should that be? How many million tons should that be, Jim? Jim says within 7 million tons of weight. The world needs to lose the total weight we're talking about, millions of tons, the world as a whole needs to lose to be on the right weight. And you know it's not going to happen, but let's go to the phones right now, see if anyone knows that, like Idaho Falls. P.J. Stevens. Hey, P.J. Oops. That was P.J. Stevens in Idaho Falls. He had something to do. Norman, though, is in Cleveland Heights.
Good morning. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine, Norman.
We need to lose 400 million pounds, tons.
A little less. Quite a bit less.
A little less.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, the phone is still ringing at Shirley's residence in Raytown, Kansas. Maybe not. Let's go to Ted in Kenosha. Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing, Michael?
I'm good. But, you know, the world as a whole needs to lose a lot of weight. We're talking about millions of tons of weight we need to lose, but not so many millions of tons.
Yeah, I think about 100 million tons.
No.
Darn it.
Think about it again, Ted.
300 million tons?
No, you're way high. You're way high, Ted.
Oh, 10 million tons.
You're kind of low.
I think the world needs to lose 25 million tons.
No. I don't know, Ted. You're beating around the bush. Let's split the difference. What would you say?
Between
20 million and 10 million.
Between 20 and 10 million,
yeah.
I think the world needs to lose 15 million tons.
That's fine. It's 16.5 million. It's so obvious that you were going to get it eventually. Anyway, Ted, this is Sean.
Hello.
Hey, Sean.
Ted's in Kenosha there. What are you doing in Kenosha, Ted?
I'm in advertising.
Oh, you are? Okay. I used to live there, you know.
I heard that,
Didn't grow up there, but spent the best part of my youth there.
Good.
So the two of you guys work together. You met, right? You cool with that? Anything else you want to bond?
I don't know.
Take them out with a brother-in-law with their time. All right, Ted and Sean, you are a team. We have various categories to choose from. And Michelle, what are those?
Those categories are people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Ted, what'd you pick first one? What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention.
Okay, the Titans. These are the ones who were the sons and daughters of somebody in mythology. Okay, the Titans. I want to know, is the Titans were the sons and daughters of who? Was it Zeus, Apollo, or Uranus?
Huh.
God always gets a laugh. I don't know why. Only God who gets a laugh every time.
Sean, what do you think?
I think Apollo, but I'm not positive. I would lean towards Apollo.
I was kind of leaning towards Zeus.
Okay. Well, none of you are leaning towards Uranus, and that's what it is.
Oh.
I don't mean that ironically.
That's one wrong and none right.
Okay. Very good. Don't worry about that. That was a tough one.
Shake.
But neither of you had it, so I had to let you go on that. What's left there?
People, places, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Sean, which one would you like?
Let's try science.
Science. Okay, science. Are you up here for some kind of event or something?
A family vacation at the Dells, so we just drove down for the morning. So.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for doing that. Have you seen all the
Yep, we had a full week. Yep. Stuff? Mount Olympus, the whole nine.
So. Yeah. If you get out on the water there, you know, behind everything, into the actual Dells, it's really very pretty.
Yeah, we went back on some tours. So.
Yeah, cool. Which is more likely to reduce a man's fertility, his job or his beer?
Uranus.
I'm going to give you credit for that because that's okay, let's give credit. All right, now let's go with the real answer here. Job or beer, which could more affect his quality of fertility stuff? I don't want to say it because it's...
I don't know. What do you think, Sean?
I'm not in Michigan, but you can't say certain things.
I'm thinking job on this one. Sitting, standing, job? Your positions you're in. Yep.
Cool. Ted?
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Job, yeah, job. Drink as much beer as you want, man. It's good for you and helps fertility.
One right and one wrong.
There's no fertility without beer in a man, actually. That's pretty much a known fact. Yes, what's left there, Michelle?
We have left people, places, or odds and ends.
People, places, odds and ends. Ted.
How about people?
How about people, huh? I was just saying that this morning. How about people? Percentage of people who can overlook bad breath and still have a good first date. Okay? I don't remember this dating process, but I know that was kind of a killer. But is it 0.4%, 2%, or 14%? Can overlook bad breath on a first date.
I was thinking.
Say it was still good.
I was thinking 25, so I'd have to go with 14.
14%. Okay.
You think 14 is? You think
maybe 14 I'm being generous. I don't know.
You're very forgiving.
Maybe not.
I'm not saying not to go. I'm just saying okay. You are. It's good. It's a good quality. I was just noting.
All right.
Ted, what do you think?
I agree. If the audience seems to think 14 is good,
that's contingent on a lot that you can't allow. Ted, is it 14%? You're gonna go
14.
With 14?
Sure.
14%. I'm surprised myself. I don't know if we're being honest or not.
Good job, Sean.
Two right and one wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is there. You sound like Siri sometimes. It's so weird. Get me a drink of water.
Yes, Mr. Feldman.
Siri doesn't do that yet, but she will. When they get the 5, you know, the iPhone 5, she actually will bring you things. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm getting one then. What'd you say? 2 and 1, right?
Yep. 2 right, 1 wrong.
And what's left?
Places or odds and ends.
Places or odds and ends. Sean.
Ooh, odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Okay.
There you go.
So you got kids and stuff with you?
Yep. Four kids with us.
You got 4 kids?
Yep.
Two. All 4 years?
Two are mine, two are his.
Yeah. What do you got?
8 and 5-year-old, older girl and younger boy.
Oh, nice. Perfect. If fecal bacteria sounds bad to you, and it probably does to you, what's the one thing you should not touch in your hotel room? Well, the worst thing you can possibly touch if you're worried about certain types of bacteria that you can't say in Michigan. Is it A, the light switch, B, the remote, or C, the toilet handle?
I think I've heard it's the remote.
Okay. Did you hear any other ones?
I've heard all of them. Maybe the handle, the light switch.
You've heard all of those?
Yeah.
You talk to a lot of people, I guess, in your business, because it's sort of along these lines.
What do you think?
CFUs, they call them. Yes.
Yeah, the light switch sounds good.
Light switch? What makes you say that, Ted?
Well, I was going to guess the old standby Uranus, but that wasn't one of the answers.
Ted, you got to stop it. I know you're from Kenosha, so I'm cutting you some slack, you know?
Thanks, Michael.
But enough with that.
Maybe not the light switch. Maybe the remote.
No, wait a minute. Let's go back. Let's backtrack. Before
I think the light switch is...
Before I upbraided you.
Well, right.
What? Would you say light switch?
Light switch.
He says the light switch is the thing to avoid.
I agree.
Yes, it's the light switch, and the one thing you can't avoid. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Put a sock over your hand and then turn on the lights. They've won.
They have.
And what have they won?
They, Sean, you will keep high and dry under any summer thunderstorm with a grass and daisies pattern umbrella from Omaha's Lauritsen Gardens, an urban oasis of beauty and tranquility. And Ted, you've won Steep and Brew Breakfast Blend, as well as a packet of Costa Rican Terrazu, grown high in the Pacific slopes. Smooth,
fantastic,
sweet, and bursting with flavor from Madison's Steep and Brew Coffee. We know beans about coffee. And each of you can make everything taste better with a shaker of Bloody Mary seasoning by Johnny Velvet of Mary's House of Vodka from Something Special from Wisconsin. And spend the rest of the summer playing What Do You Know the Party Game, including chips, questions, contestants, and a real live audience, along with the sporty Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing. Available exclusively at notmuch.com.
He uses his foot on that. That's how we do that.
What Do You Know travels to Pocatello, Idaho for a live broadcast on Friday, July 27th at Idaho State University's Stevens Performing Arts Center. Tickets are available at isu.edu/tickets.
What about Sean?
Or by calling 282-3595.
You know, usually this is the time we do thanks for the memos and people's mail and so forth, but everything that's coming in is about Jim, and I thought this hour we should give Jim a little time because he certainly deserves the airtime. And we can't stop thinking about him anyhow, so might as well deal with it. So all the mail, lots of things, people coming with Jim stories and Jim influences and Jim this and that. And we will open up the phones a little bit later and let people call in with anything they have about Jim Packard or any feelings they want to share, or if Jim ever picked up a dinner for them. We'd like to hear that person in particular.
We only have an hour now.
Yeah. So here's just some of the mailing. And then we're going to have a little bit here that I want to play for you from earlier, one of our earlier shows. But some of the letters. I greet warmly. My name is Piotr. I'm 18. I have 18 years old. I live in the Poland. And I learn about the world. Interest me very large cities. I ask very much to send me, if possible, a map or key leash, pen or some free trinket samples from your city and company. My address suggests Piotr in Szczecin, Poland. I thank very much. That was not about Jim. I don't know how that got in there, but we'll send him a little key leash. We'll send him a leash of some sort. Do we have leashes?
I think we do.
Okay, send him a leash. I know. Dick Alpert writes, Jim Packard was the man who gave me my first real break of note at the old WMAD in Madison in the mid to late 70s. He was a nurturing man and mentor for me, and I always remembered his gentle style with me. It was so important to have had that at that point in my career, which now has me doing traffic for Clear Channel stations in Milwaukee and Madison. I came to broadcast to a broadcast some years ago at Vilas Hall, and he remembered me, which made my year. I've always tried to base my on-air presence on his. What a loss, Dick Alpert. Thank you very much, Dick, for that. And, actually, when I came up to school here in Madison, Jim was on Radio Free Madison. Any of you remember that? Remember when FM was such a big deal, when they would play, like, entire album cuts, sides of albums, and it was like a revolution. Revolution was in the air in the 70s, and Jim was Jim St. John. And I asked him if he still owned the name or something. It's a pretty cool name, Jim St. John, you know. John St. John would have been better, I thought. Yeah. Or Jim St. Jim. But he was on there. He was in Radio Free Madison and stuff. And he's been on at a lot of stations around Wisconsin, particularly southern Wisconsin. So he was fired from every major station in the state before sticking at public radio. No, not fired. That's the way commercial radio is. You know, you're on and they change your format and you go somewhere else. But he did all that. So he was a commercial guy as well as public radio guy. Shane says, we hardly knew you, Jim, but your voice will long be known with us. I recall first impressions were of a rock-solid Madison guy fittingly introduced years ago by some State Street guy named Carl. This trip is starting to seem a lot shorter every year. That's from Shane. Kathleen Markward, I'm so sad by Jim's death. What do you know? Won't be the same without him. Michael, it's so hard to lose such a long friendship and partnership. Take good care of yourself. Thank you. We were so sad to hear the passing of Jim Packard. He was truly a friend of the... Oh, this is from the folks at the Wollersheim Winery. And they owe him because Jim gave away a lot of their wine. I think he gave away one and kept one, personally. But we moved a lot of Wollersheim wine thanks to Jim Packard. We were so sad to hear the passing of Jim. He was truly a friend, and we are thinking of the family and friends he has left behind. Please know we are thinking of you all this time. Thank you again for your time and take care. There's more. What I want to do is play a little thing All right. How did Jim and I first? I was assigned when I came back to do the show after a major setback in Chicago. Speaking of being fired from my only commercial gig, really, except for a weekend in the cornfield in Sun Prairie at WMAD, two weekend nights. Right. Was freaked out because it was overnight in the cornfield. Have you ever been overnight in a cornfield? You know, they had the big window there. You could look out, and it was corn at night. Nothing more terrifying than a cornfield. Have you ever been in a cornfield at night? You're looking perplexed. Go to Sun Prairie and wait till the sun sets. Walk around. Terrifying. You know, Children of the Corn is scary for a reason. So I was there. That was my only thing. I quit at work or something, and I was trying to work again, and I did it, but it terrified me. And a woman called in and said, I just had a niece that was just born. Would you play Hell's Bells by AC/DC for her? So, and I did in the cornfield there, and I didn't work there again. So, but Jim, as I say, worked all over, and he was like radio, the consummate radio professional, and he also was of the old school of announcing, which means he actually could announce, you know, without sounding like he was announcing. Because he had a great speaking voice, great pipes, and he had this little Norwegian twang, which I always found good. I think it's a good thing. There's some intonation that is Norwegian. I don't know what it is. It comes from some other place that you don't have to pay for. And there's some to it. And all right, so when I came back here and I got a chance to do this, what do you know, actually? And they said, well, you're going to need an announcer. And I said, why do I need an announcer? I just had the worst experience of my life. They teamed me with this woman in Chicago, and we used to fight over the, you know, how loud each other was. We had to take turns, you know, doing the board, and there's these little levers and stuff. And they super glued them so we could not pot each other down. But she was loud. She was a traffic copter reporter, you know, and so I pounded on it until I bled one time just to get her down because I couldn't see. I said, I don't really need an announcer. I've had bad experience with working with anyone on any level, you know, let alone. They said, no, Jim would be really good for the show. And so Jim was more or less put on the show. Well, that's okay. I mean, I knew Jim and everything, and it was cool. We used to walk our dogs occasionally in the same places. And he was cool. I liked him and everything. And I knew he was actually a radio guy. But I was a little intimidated by him, to tell you the truth, because he was a pro. And I was not even a talented amateur. I've never actually made pro. I don't, you know, flying. I mean, there's someone who's a professional radio guy, and then there's me, you know, long-term amateur, whatever. So one of the thing that got set up in the relationship is what I'm saying is that Jim would try to do his announcing, and I would try to wreck it.
Yeah, you did a very good job of it too.
Yeah, no, because that's the only approach I could take to it. I would try to, because he would go into a thing, and he hated to stop reading his copy. You know, because announcers don't do that. You know, so he'd be doing his copy, and I would try to disrupt him and, you know, change the subject or something. Or I did try burning his copy a couple times, but he's too quick. You know, he got it away. I occasionally would move his microphone out while he was broadcasting, and he would have to try to follow it. But that was cruel.
You were a little more manic in those days, too.
I was. This, we have a little clip here. This is from one of the first towns of the week. So Jim had this thing where we did this thing, Town of the Week. We did Town of the Week originally because we were only on in Wisconsin. And, you know, we wanted to sound like we were in all kinds of places. So we took a map of the U.S. and threw a dart at it and said, you know, so let's talk about, you know, the place where we weren't on, and, you know, period. And Town of the Week was Jim's thing. He would go in and did a really good job on it, investigating it and all this stuff. And then he could do, good writer, actually, so he could use his writing talents. And I would try to screw it all up. And it's sort of just, this is one of the early ones from 1986. Let's go right to that right now. This time, of course, each week, we honor a town of the week. How do we do it? Well, we throw a dart here at the Rand McNally map. Last week, we forgot to do it. So after the show, we threw it until we found a town we liked. And we came up with one in Nevada. Here with town of the week is Jim Packard.
Nestled in a meadow valley bounded by the Trinity and Seven Troughs Mountains to the north and west and by the Humboldt Range to the east lies the Pershing County seat of Lovelock, Nevada, population 1,680. This valley was on the old Truckee route of the California Trail, and the last grass and water for the wagon train stock was found here before crossing the desert.
The Truckee?
Truckee, by the way, was a famed Paiute Indian chief who guided the wagons.
Chief Truckee?
Chief Truckee. And his descendants still live in Lovelock.
Uh-huh.
In 1862, an Englishman, George Lovelock, arrived to build a small stagecoach station. Later, when the railroad came through, the depot was named for him.
Did it come right through the station?
When Pershing County was named for him.
How did he get the name of the town? See, what I don't understand is when a guy moves into town, and they name the town after him. I mean, that's never happened to you, has it? I mean, you've moved to a town, they named the town after you? Like Packardville?
Packardville, right up near Portage.
Yeah, but
yes.
Not after you, right? Let's face it.
No, they haven't named
Feldmanburg?
Anything. Not yet.
My name doesn't lend itself to a town, obviously.
Well, Feldman.
Yeah, the town of Feldman. So the trick is to be somewhere where a town is starting and to be obvious and to have your name out.
And Lovelock, interestingly enough, had survived a shipwreck thousands of miles away. And
shipwreck in Nevada would be rough, wouldn't it? If he had, they'd probably never find it.
If he hadn't suffered the shipwreck, he never would have ended up in Nevada.
In Nevada. That's right.
Some mining goes on nearby, and a new mine is scheduled to open soon. Other employment is found in agriculture.
What do they dig there?
Dig?
Yeah. It's a mining term.
They have the most extensive variety of minerals found
anywhere. I heard that part, Jim, but what does that
mean? They dig it all. They dig it all.
They dig it all.
Perlite.
If you don't know, that's all right to say you don't know. You know,
gold,
that's fine.
All those things.
Quartz, tin, and lead as well?
I'm sure. The entire variety of species.
All right.
Agriculture, retail, trade, tourism, very important, and a new minimum security prison is to open in the near future, which will offer employment opportunities. There are many nearby mining ghost towns to visit, and Lovelock Cave is just south of town, well known as the home of Indian cave dwellers thousands of years ago.
When the guy was getting shipwrecked.
At the ancient lake. Many of the caves have now been desecrated. People have gone in, destroyed them, defaced them, mm-hmm. torn out all of the old Indian relics.
Well, that's tourism, though.
The reservoir for the valley
with tourists.
Is located at the Rye Patch State Park, and this weekend the Rye Patch Fishing Derby is being held. The other major reason that Lovelock is noted in history is that motorists hit the last stoplight on I-80 before reaching the West Coast here.
That's the last stoplight at Lovelock?
Yes.
Really? That's great.
It's one of two round courthouses in the country, located in the Nile Valley of the West. It's our town of the week, Lovelock, Nevada.
This part is just my part. It wasn't as good as Jim's part. You know, we call, and you know, in those days we used to call truly randomly because I had the phone right there. And I would call people and get them in the middle of it, and it would all be on the air. You know, we didn't screen or anything. And then we were on NPR at that time, and a lawyer from NPR said, You can't do that. You cannot put people on the air. You know, I don't know if it's a misdemeanor or a felony to do that. Put someone on the air without their saying, okay. So we stopped doing that, and then Lyle started doing it. It was about that time, wasn't it, you started doing it? Yeah, and Lyle's still here, too. So, but it's not much fun, it's actually, because they used to hang up on me all the time. Because, you know, you're in Wyoming or someplace, and some guy...
I think it was Kansas that hung up on you like five times in a row.
Yeah, Kansas. I was not big in Kansas. It gave a certain idea of what we were up against, you know, because you're actually meeting the actual, you know, potential listeners, and not everyone wants to talk on the air, you know. So we stopped doing that. All right, I'm going to give people a chance to call in. Let's give that number once again. I don't know if people know how to get through to us.
1-800-942-5669.
That's the number. That's the number to call. Easy way to remember that?
800-WHA-KNOW. Wah, no, or whack, now.
Okay. That's the one. Jim invented that, by the way. And I'm not saying his job was easy, but on the road, the only thing he had to do, really, was to find, when we had a new phone number, was to find out some words that it spelled. And I don't think once there was one that actually was useful. They were always very strange amalgams of words and stuff. Now, we got the What Do You Know trio here now, of course, with John and Jeff and Clyde Stubblefield, who have joined us here, Clyde, very close friend of Jim's. And I guess, are all the songs you're playing going to be some things that Jim liked, or?
No.
No. Okay. This is a song that Jim hated.
What?
And he wished, I used to turn to him and I'd say, not this again, Jim. And he just gave me the nod, so I knew he felt the same way, this particular song. And which one is it, then? Yeah, possibly, or what? Shouldn't you talk about this beforehand?
Yeah, well, I thought this was going to be a whole tribute to Jim and we weren't going to play anymore.
Oh, no, that's where we got you.
Did you know that Jim also invented the internet?
Yes, he did. It's just a series of tubes. He knew that.
You're listening to Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
You were so subtle on the drums. That's so unlike you.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure you having me here today to play with the guys, you know. So
that's for Jim, right?
I enjoyed that. Yeah, this is for Jimmy, of course, yeah. Hot man. All right. But we got a hot lady over there, too, now. So.
Well, you'll go with anybody, won't you?
Oh, yeah.
Very nice and very subtle on the drums. You know, not quite the funky beat we're used to, but I'm sure we'll get to something along those lines as well. We got lots of people on the phones here talking about Jim Packard, and a lot of people have some things to say, some memories. to Cher and Mary Lee's in Grundy Center, Iowa. Hi, Mary Lee.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing really well today.
Hi. Good. Well, and go ahead. What do you have to say about Jim? Or what feelings do you have? Are you there? Mary Lee? Mary Lee! Overcome with emotion. Mary Lee in Grundy Center, Iowa. I guess we lost her. Okay. How about Sally, then, in Green Bay?
Hi.
How are you?
I regret that I never got to your show to see Jim because he really was a big asset to your show.
Thank you very much on behalf of Jim.
And not that we wouldn't like to see you. I just haven't been able to snag a ride with anybody that way.
Yeah, it's not me. It's not. If Jim would have drawn you probably pretty quickly if you had gotten a ride.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks very much for calling. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Whit's on the line from Mount Nebo, West Virginia.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Whit.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. I just really wanted to call to express my sorrow at the loss of Jim. I think that he and I actually had shared very similar feelings about Sarah Palin in the past.
Did you share those with him?
Yeah, on your show, actually.
Yeah.
Probably a year ago or so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. What was Jim's take on Sarah Palin?
I answered the answer incorrectly, and he gave it to me.
Oh, that's rare.
Yeah, it's when I got my first flying screaming monkey.
Really?
Remember those?
Are those still occurring to you, or have you taken something for it?
Actually, I took it over to the bar and almost got thrown out.
Well, you can thank Jim for that, too.
I know. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I've been wanting to ask you this for a long time.
Yeah.
Are you really sure that you're Michael Feldman?
As opposed to what?
Bob Newhart.
Oh, okay. No.
You're sure you never owned a bed and breakfast in New Hampshire?
No, no, no. But you know what? I have the same shoe size as Hedy Lamarr, and no one makes that mistake. Thanks, Whit.
You have a good day.
Okay, nice talking with you.
Thank you.
John's in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Not too bad.
Anything you want to say about Jim or what we're talking about? Or?
Well, I always remember that before I left Wisconsin, I did go to the shop that he used to work at, and I think he fitted for a suit from him, so I had that connection with him.
Yeah. At the Burlington Coat Factory?
Yes.
Yes. And did he fix you up good?
He tried to.
Oh, what are the? Did it work out pretty good for you? Or?
For me, yeah.
Yeah. Jim was my costume advisor as well here because he actually was a dresser and quite a natty individual, and I'm sort of like whatever is clean, you know, and reach in. And even if it isn't, you know, if you like that one, it's in the hamper. Who's going to know it's radio? But Jim was very careful about how he dressed, and he was always aghast at my dress. But he actually helped me. I dressed a little better. I wore this shirt just for Jim, didn't I?
It's my, that's good. Mike, see it online, but you can't see it on the radio.
Yeah, I know, but it's a personal thing. But thanks for calling, John.
Bye.
Take care. Ed's on the line from West Dallas. Hey, Ed.
Yeah, Rick Riamaterin, I'm for Jim. But I have a story. We have a freeway flyer that takes people down to Summerfest.
Mm-hmm.
And this is many years ago, and he was one of the last people on the bus, but he was with a different group. So he got separated. He got on the bus, and he was patting himself down, and you could tell by his voice who he was. And he was saying to me, my friends have my money. My friends have my money. And I said, you don't have any money, sir, to pay the fare? And he said, that's right. And I said, I think I know your voice. I said, this English professor told me that the best phrase in the English language is cellar door, the most poetic. So from the freeway flyer lot all the way down to Summerfest, I made him repeat the word cellar door for his fare.
You made him do that?
I sure did.
And did he do it?
He sure did. And that's my Jim Packer story.
Well, that's one I haven't heard before. I got to give you credit on that one.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Ed from Weston. See, he's touched a lot of lives and a lot of cellar doors, apparently. Ann's in San Francisco. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to pay tribute to Jim and send my condolences to everybody. I met all you guys in Berkeley when you guys were out here. This was back in 2006.
Right.
And Jim and his wife Deb came out afterwards to my husband's restaurant, and after that, he just started emailing me all the time.
So did?
Yeah, we were email pen pals for this whole time, and the last time...
Nothing unwarranted, I hope.
Well, it got kind of personal sometimes. But, I mean, it was we were just totally friends, but he used to send pictures of the dogs and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, and I was sending him a lot of get well cards recently because he'd been in the hospital. And
right.
He always liked them, and he was just so excited to go to New York. And
right.
He told me in the last email that he was really excited, and they missed a flight, so they had to change it and all that, and. But his last words were, "Let the journey begin."
Yeah, right.
So he was something, and I'm going to really, really miss him.
Yeah, and he was feeling pretty bad behind New York. I mean, it's been a pretty progressive, this thing,
yeah.
This past year. It went pretty quick. It was really unbelievable. But Jim would not miss a show. I mean, he would come in out of the hospital. He'd be 2 days out of the hospital and in here doing his show.
I couldn't believe it. I turned the radio on. It's like, he's on. I knew he was just in the hospital.
You couldn't keep him away.
I know.
That's really... why I believe he's here now. I have every confidence that he's here and probably aghast at some of the things that I'm saying wrong about his past.
and he
nailed that New York show. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
It was a great show, and Jim was on, and he gave it all he got, and it was a great show. So.
Did he fawn over Sarah Jessica?
Well, I was sort of in the way of that.
I know, you told me.
Now she's getting emails from me every day.
Oh,
I'm sending her pictures of my dog. And
picking
stuff.
It up, okay.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for calling. Camille's on the line from Tallahassee. Hey, Camille.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too good.
No.
Still crying about Jim.
Oh, yeah. Well, it comes and goes with me, too. See, I'm a crier. People wouldn't expect it of me, but if I can't make a joke in a situation, I have no recourse but to cry. So I try not to do that, because I was a crier as a kid and learned how to tell jokes and make light of things. But some things, are impossible to make light of, and you cry. So.
Well, we on the chat group will miss him very much.
Yeah. You're in the chat group.
Yes,
yeah,
I'm.
Cool.
I'm Packard Girl.
Packard Girl, yes.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes.
I had recognized.
Oh, Packard Girl, fine.
Good, good.
Camille's not so well, but Packard Girl is just great.
Yeah.
And we love you guys, and we will miss him, but we know that we will welcome his replacement.
Mm-hmm. How did you? Are you gone?
No.
I thought I heard. Hang on. And how did you choose the name, the nom de plume? Packard Girl.
Because usually most people go after the host of the show when they want to, when they want to go after somebody, and I wanted to go for the other person.
Yeah, there is no Feldman Girl. I have noticed that in the chat group.
Well, I had to be different.
Yeah, no, well, okay.
You have all the women at your feet, but Jim didn't. So.
No, he had a lot of women at his feet too.
Besides his wife, I mean.
No, right. I didn't mean that then.
Oh,
I take that back. You're right. He didn't have any women at his feet.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that's what I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Thanks, Camille.
All righty.
Packard
bye,
Girl.
Michael.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
John's on the line from Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. Hi. Hey, Jim always came up with those great little nuggets of wit about the final round of the quiz. And
yeah.
I always kind of wanted to ask him how he felt about the ones that he didn't get to use because... They didn't move on to the last round. Do you ever say anything about that?
No, I never questioned his, whatever he had. You know what? Jim had this little folder thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were all these things in there that no one was allowed to see. Some of them might have been these little things they'd worked out in advance, but little, if you don't win, if you get the question wrong, then you only win, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's usually based on something that happened on the show, and they're always pretty good. But he also had these other things that he had in there. And no one was allowed to see it.
Huh.
So I don't know. There could have been a lot of nuggets in there.
Yeah. Well, I just want to remember all the warmth and wit and wisdom, spoken and unspoken, that we had every week with Jim.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
It's very, very nice of you.
Bye.
Bye. Amy's online from Milwaukee. Hey, Amy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh. Because some people can't on this phone, I don't know. I called my, well, he's now my ex-husband in North Carolina, to tell him about Jim because he doesn't get, they don't get what he know, what do you know down mm-hmm. there.
Right.
And he looked up in the, on his computer his obituary and it said he's been doing what he knows since 1985.
Mm-hmm.
But he and I both swear that we had been to Madison, oh, two or three times to see your show. Before we were married and right after we were married. And that was, it was before 85.
Yeah.
Is that really, it's just 85?
Isn't that long enough? I mean, it seems like a long, that's a long haul to me. That's like, this is our 27th year, actually,
yeah,
being
yeah.
partner.
Well, I don't know. I just couldn't believe it when you said that this morning.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing him, and we didn't get to talk to him. But then when we moved to North Carolina, and we did the call-in thing, my husband really wanted to call in to What Do You Know and play the quiz, and he won, and we won a bunch of crazy stuff. But we still have a lot of the stuff, or I still have a lot of the stuff that we got.
Everything but the husband, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was low. Well, we're still good.
All right.
We're still good friends. But,
right. Thank Amy. Thank you so much. I want there's other people waiting too to get in, but thank you so much for your call.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. And
right,
I want to
you.
Tell you that What Do You Know is the best thing about moving back to Wisconsin for me.
Oh, right, thank you, Amy. And come and see us sometime.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye. Charlie is in Little Rock, Arkansas. Hi, Charlie.
Hello, Michael. I'm very sorry for your loss. Very sorry for everyone's loss. I didn't know that he passed until I turned on the show today,
mm-hmm.
and I got on my email and took a look at a story about him, and it was great because it was a comparison of that he was like the announcer to Groucho Marx.
George Fenneman, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And you all are just, it was such a unique relationship, and I won't take up much more time except to say that's two right and one wrong.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Clarence is in Ashland, Wisconsin. Hey, Clarence.
Morning, Michael.
How are you?
I wanted to reminisce about Jim Packard because
yes.
I first met Jim in 1969.
Uh-huh.
He hired me as an FM board operator at WISM in Madison.
At WISM. Mm-hmm.
And hadn't seen him for a long time. A few years ago, I went up to Bayfield when he was with the Larry Mueller Show
mm-hmm.
doing their spring garden show, and I thought, I wonder if Jim will remember me. So during a break, I walked up to Jim, and as I'm walking up, he held out his hand, and he said, I know you. I just can't remember your name. And that was about 35 years mm-hmm. in between the times that we had met each other.
Yeah.
So he remembered everybody, I think.
Yeah. Did you tell him your name, or did you just make him suffer? Because that
I
would drive
him
crazy.
Yeah, I told him my name, and I was also once known as Paul Lewis on WISM News. And
mm-hmm.
But he remembered. You know, he just couldn't come up with my name. But,
yeah.
Knew me from 35 years ago.
Did he give you your first big break? Is that what that was?
Well, yeah, sort of, I guess. I ended up working at WISM for about 4 years, and I'm still doing sports play-by-play in northern Wisconsin.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Who do you do that for? Who do you cover?
For Heartland Communications in Ashland.
Yeah. So what teams are we talking about?
Ashland High School
and
some of the smaller communities around the area.
Okay. And the Ashland, the Fighting?
The Ore Dockers.
The Ore Dockers, of course. That's right. The Ore Dockers of Ashland. And by the way, is the Ore Dock still there?
It's on the way down.
Yeah, because they're going to tear that down.
They've started to tear it down now.
Because we were up there not that long ago, and I thought, that's a great motif. They should fix it. I don't know what you do with an Ore Dock to fix it up, but don't you think?
There were a lot of things over the years that they were trying to figure out what to do with it, and it ended up that they had to tear it down.
Yeah. I was out there drinking on a terrace with Jim, looking at the ore dock. And I said, Jim, they ought to do something with that ore dock. Why tear it down? That's very distinctive. It's a feature, you know.
There were a lot of proposals going around. There were, at one time, they wanted to put some kind of a maritime museum out there.
Yeah, or a casino. They should have put a casino.
That would be good. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thanks, Clarence, very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Michael.
It.
Bye.
Bye. Andy's not there. Luke's in Madison. We'll go to him. Hey, Luke.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Good. It's worth noting that I can see Monona Terrace from my house.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
From the other side?
Off of John Nolan, south side of the bay here.
Cool.
So, anyway, no huge story with Jim, but about a year and a half ago, after he retired, I was sitting in the Fordham Avenue Einstein Bagels here, and looked over and I thought, that's Jim Packard. And sure enough, he was sitting there just having some breakfast or whatever, and didn't want to go bother him, but he got up to leave, and I just said, happy retirement, and he looked over and said thank you and smiled, so thought that was a nice little gesture. And
that's the whole story?
Yeah, pretty much.
You could have made something up. I would have never known. You could have said, told his life story, going back to the Army days and all that stuff.
Well, there's still time.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, and thank you all for calling in. Thank you all for everybody writing in and all the communications about Jim. And we're much appreciated. And, of course, our hearts are all going out to Deb Packard, his wife of these many years. And I won't be able to say any more. I always explain that Jim was controlling the applause sign, And I would say, don't try to outguess him. He's a seasoned radio professional, which, of course, he was. And I said the applause sign could go on for any reason. For example, if I mentioned his beautiful wife, Deb Packard. And so that was. So, Deb, you're still getting applause. That's the good news. All right, gentlemen, you feel like playing a little number here now again? We got the trio. We have the funky drummer, Clyde Stubblefield, here. Big Jim Packard fan. He has no drumsticks. So didn't you bring any drumsticks? What's the matter with you? Oh. Only thing he forgot, drumsticks.
Very evocative, very moody, moody and evocative, both. That's the same word, isn't it? Pretty much the same thought, moody and evocative. Do you see any difference between moody and evocative?
No.
Okay, see ya. That's why I'm not a seasoned radio professional, when you come right down to it. Wouldn't the world be better if everyone was more like Jim? Yes, but no one would ever pick up a check. I got it. So you gain some, you lose some. Great guy, though. Actually started to. Jim always would tip 12%. That was one thing that bothered about me, about him. And we boosted him all the way up to 20%. It took year by year. We had him up to 15, then we had him up to 17. Or, you know, right? Am I right? Yeah. Eventually, we got him up to 20%. You know. And then this other thing he would do is he would come with the 2-for-1 coupons when he was alone. Thinking that he could get his meal half price. And I said, Jim, this is a 2-for-1 coupon. It means you have two people. Yeah, oh, never mind. Other than that, he was a great guy. Becky Silva, is that right? Silva? Madison? If you were stuck on a deserted island, who of the following would be your companion of choice? Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, Rebecca Black, or Snooki from Jersey Shore? I'd drown. I would swim out. I would swim out until I drowned. And frankly, with my swimming, it wouldn't take that long. Thank you for, like, the worst possible choices. Where is Becky?
Where?
Yeah. Do you like any of these people?
I like Lady Gaga.
Yeah, Lady Gaga, but still I'd have to drown. I see what you mean. She'd be most, you know, interesting. Justin Bieber, I would have to kill him, and then I'd drag him out with me when I was drowning. We have to go right to the What Do You Know quiz because we're running a little short on time, and I got to know, who thinks this could be a life changer for them to play the What Do You Know quiz at this time? Let's see the hand there of the person who wants their life changed. And I've never seen more lack of enthusiasm since I taught high school. This is why I quit teaching high school. I want you to know that. All right, now you seem to have your hand up first, and I have no other way of judging at this point, because most people don't have their hands up at all. Yes, you can stand up if you would. You're casual, I like that.
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Fine, thank you. You are?
Matt Madsen.
Matt Madsen?
Yes.
Are you from here, Matt Madsen?
I'm from Denver, Colorado.
You are?
Yeah.
We always applaud towns, and you didn't know that. Yeah. You name it, we applaud it.
All right, sweet.
What do you do in Denver?
How much time do we have?
No, I'm sorry.
I'm a youth educator, teach kids how to ride bikes, and I'm going to grad school.
Cool. In bikes? Grad school in bikes?
Public health. Health.
Same thing.
Pawpaws and ding-dongs.
Pawpaws. Matt Madsen, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because I'm about to sit in a car for 18 hours by myself, so I need to talk to somebody.
Okay, talk to me, Matt. I'll talk to you. Come on this way. Good. Come on, Matt Matson. You're going to be in a car for 18 hours. Have a seat there if you would.
I did. Long night.
Did you need to hydrate?
Yeah, yeah.
Long
little,
night.
Little dehydrated.
In what regard was that?
Didn't go to bed till
what?
Late.
What? Who?
Where?
What? Where?
When?
She did?
Yeah.
She said that to you?
Yeah, I can't believe
it,
too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I had to actually call my parents right away and tell
that
them.
That is so unfair.
Yeah.
So you do educator, and then, so what? How does that work? What do you teach?
So it's through Safe Routes to School, which is programs we go into the school districts all over Colorado and teach kids safe biking and walking, and then we set up bike rodeo courses and teach kids how to ride bikes.
Do you teach them how to slide through a stop sign? Or?
Yeah. We
the best
say
ways
cars
of sliding
don't,
through
we're
a
like,
stop
cars don't stop, you might as well not stop either.
At least slow down, you know?
Yeah.
That's the one thing that bugs me. This is a town filled with bike riders, you know? Why does everyone, now there is a guy coming to the show today. All right. This was an older guy, and he had produce from the farmer's market on his bike. There are cars coming, and he goes, he doesn't even stop, goes right through the stop sign, and you know, a
but
mistake.
If you don't get home fast, it'll spoil.
I know, but I mean, you know,
and
there should be a cutoff in age at least. You know, when you hit 60,
then you, can do
you should not
you
be allowed to slide through a.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way.
No.
Once you turn 60, you can do whatever you want.
You're right.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He's all right. It's everybody else that bugs me. That and the latex outfits.
Oh, the
whatever they are, Lycra.
The spandex.
Spandex.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah, the full uniform.
What is with that?
Well, I will say the shorts
are
good when you go on a long bike ride. But
doesn't
the
that
full,
constrict your pawpaw or
it,
your,
or your ding dong or whatever?
Or your whatever. You
yeah, I mean, whatever you got, it holds it in there. But
your tomatillo.
There's
your tomatillo is probably good.
There's padding on the rump.
What?
And so you can sit longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they wear them because they look like they're in the French, whatever, you know.
It's as close to a Speedo as you get in the U.S., pretty much.
I know. I expect to see Russian immigrants dressed like that, not American citizens. Russian
you,
guy
you should
like
go.
A Russian guy at the beach. I want to look like a Russian guy at the beach. That's what I want to do.
You should go to Denver on the weekend.
I know. I've been out there. I don't know what you mean. They're very advanced out there, though.
Yeah, in some ways.
Yes. Mitt, you know how this... Matt.
Yeah. Did you just call me Mitt?
I was calling you Mitt. I'm sorry. It's all because I couldn't read my own writing. I wrote Matt down, and I came up Mitt.
Called me Mitt.
I'm sorry. Don't worry about it. It won't happen again. His name is Willard anyway. Why does he even use that? So, Matt, you know how this works? Someone out there plays along with you?
Yes.
And so forth and so forth. In 18 hours, you're driving back to Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Boulder one summer.
Okay.
Made that. That's a long.
Did you recruit friends or did you go by yourself?
I went by myself.
Yeah, it's usually middle of Nebraska where you kind of start.
You hallucinate.
Going. Yeah, because
there's
nothing.
Coming back, I hallucinated right around when you got to go around Chicago. You know, I was hallucinating.
What'd you see?
I can't. Well, I saw my ex-wife, actually.
What?
But that's a different story. More time. If we had more time, we'd be going on. I need a question here, don't I? For
yes,
the,
you do.
Yes, to qualify. And how do they do that again?
They pick up the phone and call 1-800-942-5669 and answer this question.
Okay. Number of microbes that call you home is what we want to know here. It's in the trillions. We want to know how many trillions of microbes call you home. That's called the microbiome in the human body. So everyone is guaranteed at least this number of microbes. In the trillions, within how many trillions, should we say?
10.
Within 10 trillions. Let's go to the phone right now, and here's John in San Francisco. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
How many microbes are in your body, even as we speak, John? In trillions.
In trillions. Which is thousands of millions, correct?
I don't know. I just know trillions. I know it by trillions.
Trillions or thousands of billions?
Okay.
Or millions of millions. Sorry.
It's trillions.
How about 100 trillion?
That's exactly right, John. Oh, I'm so happy. Because this could go on forever otherwise without your insight. Are you in this field or anything? Are you in bacteria or anything?
Well, no. I design science exhibits.
There you go. So that's probably one of those exhibits that someone has done. All the bacteria in a human body.
Yeah, it's sometimes I try to get kids to understand big numbers.
So
that's why
I like to say 1,000,000,000 instead of 1,000,000,000.
Okay. On your time, you can do that, John. John, this is Matt.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Hey, Mitt. I'm Matt.
Start of the trend here. I'm sorry. He's so unlike Mitt Romney. Totally the opposite. Matt and John, you guys work together. You are a brain trust. And what categories do we have, Michelle?
People, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, current events, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, John, you take the first one. What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school.
Okay, had you been paying attention. Spell chamois. Simple.
Chamois?
Chamois, like in chamois, wow. Chamois.
C-H-A-M-I-E.
try it, Mitt, Matt.
I can't even spell my name. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. No, maybe S-H-A-M-I.
You're good, man. Like Shamu, only with an I? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You guys are never going to get this in a million years. It's chamois. It's the French. Chamois.
C-H-A-M-O-I-X.
Yeah, but you didn't say that. So that would be...
Oh, boy.
I didn't know
one
it was French.
One wrong and okay. No right.
You didn't know it was French?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's fun.
You've learned something.
I did.
You can deduct this trip. No. It was educational.
I can write it off.
People, places?
Can we get a do-over? Because that was a bad pronunciation.
Yeah.
No, I...
Who says chamois? A chamois, right? A chamois.
Chamois.
Give me a chamois. Hand me the chamois. Where's the chamois?
I don't know. How do they say it in France?
Yeah. Put a little elbow grease with that chamois. Stuff like that.
Chamois. Yeah.
People, places, current events, science, or odds and ends.
In France, they don't say chamois. Go ahead, man.
Let's go places.
Let's go places. All right. Red light cameras in New Jersey have been turned off due to one of the following. They turned off the red light going through it cameras in New Jersey. Because of one of the following is invasion of privacy, difficulties in changing the film, or the yellow light timing was too quick and it was illegal.
I bet the yellow light timing was too quick.
Ah. John?
I don't know. It seems like I used to live in New Jersey briefly, and getting the film changed might be a big...
They don't have the technology, you're saying? They didn't...
Well, you know.
Or he could be right. That's the other possibility.
Yeah, the yellow light sounded good.
I think yellow light is the way to go.
Yes.
All right.
It wasn't long enough. Got to be 3.5 seconds at the average intersection.
One right, one wrong.
Okay, so they were just using people. And what's left there?
People, current events, science, or odds and ends?
John?
Got to do science.
Science, it is. A grave of the largest marsupials ever has been found in Australia. Were they giant koalas? This is like a fossil. Were they giant koalas, giant wombats, or the gigantaroo? largest marsupials ever on Earth.
Pretty sure that was gigantaroo.
Yeah.
or giant koalas or giant wombats.
I still like gigantaroos, but I know it's not right.
I
feel like those are a big pair of ruse shoes.
Can you imagine a really huge koala? How frightening that would be.
A giant koala is probably what they
huge
found.
Huge teddy bear.
Yeah, koalas. I think I saw an animation about this.
I saw them at the zoo.
And it was what, a koala?
Koala.
It wasn't a wombat or... some other marsupial, very large. Used to be.
A wombat is a marsupial?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Sure. I have no idea on this one.
Well, they don't have them around here.
No.
Like the badgers, we don't have wombats.
Let's go with wombat.
We have badgers, don't have what?
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's go with it.
Yes, a giant wombat. Good thinking. Giant, big wombat, big enough a grown man could lie in a pouch lengthwise.
Two right and one wrong.
They tell me. I haven't done this. Yes.
We still have left people, current events, or odds and ends.
Matt, let's do people.
Let's do people. You're right. Percentage of Americans who have tried to lose weight 3 to an infinite number of times. Is it 51%, 38%, or 27%, according to the Gallup poll?
Probably 51%.
Or 38 or 27%. Did you hear them all?
Wait, 38?
38%? Yeah, you heard that?
Yeah, maybe 38.
38%?
Yeah, let's go 38.
What an insight. Yes, 38% of Americans tried to lose weight 3 times. To infinity. Michelle, what do they won?
Matt Madsen, you'll make some toddler happy and secure with a pair of little Freudian slippers. Plush and comfy.
Sweet.
With anti-slip soles and Freud's tongue to wiggle your toes from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild. John, even if you don't have a coin collection now, you can start one with the exclusive Jubilee Anniversary Quarter designed by Nora Feldman, incorporating iconic elements of timeless comedy, wise sayings, and rare bird life. And both of you can celebrate the seasonal travels of the famous Oscar Mayer Wienermobile with a whimsical Wienermobile print from MarshaSparks.com. And stay entertained till the cows come home playing What Do You Know? The Party Game, including the perennially popular Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at NotMuch.com.
I have some.
Thanks, man.
I have some Colorado with your bobbleheads.
Yes. Put it on the dashboard. Thanks, man. Thanks for playing. John, hang out. We'll make sure you get that. Thanks for playing, man.
Tickets are still available for What Do You Know shows in Madison on June 30th, July 7th, and July 14th at Monona Terrace. Call 608-262-2201 or go to notmuch.com for tickets. What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international, with assistance from Adam Friedrich, Todd Witter, Lyle Anderson, Judith Heisey-Kabalik, Diana Cook, and Katie Dress. Technical director Tom Blaine, with help from Aubrey Ralph and Brad Colbert. We'll see you next week back here at Monona Terrace.
Thank you all for coming. Thanks. Bye. Stopping by the band, of course.
Public Radio International.